I just want to welcome you, Michael. I mean, I've been trying to nail you down for quite a while, some time now, but we finally got connected. Thank you for being here.
Hey, thanks for having me on your show, Russ. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, absolutely, man, because it's like old school. You know, you're the OG, and I'm like the young buck. But, you know, I just really want to go ahead and kick it off with, like, just kind of introducing you to the audience and, like, just telling them a little bit about you. I know you're from Texas, but, like, where are you from in Texas? Like, you know, just give us a little background on you.
Well, I always tell people I'm outside of Houston.
One of those stories.
Well, it's easier to describe. Yeah. Actually from a small town called Elm Grove, Texas. And I went to a small 2A school in East Menard, Texas. Okay. So that's where my area is originally I came from. Okay. So you're looking at a small town success. Yeah.
So when you say small town, what's the population?
Me and my family.
So, like, when you were in high school, like, I mean, obviously you had dreams of going on to the next level just like anybody else. Like, when did you realize that this was going to happen for you coming from, like, a small school, like you said? Like, when did you know, like, I'm going
to
make it?
To be quite frank, coming from humble beginnings, that's the best way to describe it. And you take it in that context. I just knew that I wanted better. I wanted to go further. Yeah. Being where I'm from, all you can do is be a farm boy or really just don't have a life, yeah. You know, at the end of the day, especially for somebody young.
Yeah.
So I always knew that I needed to go to the next level and go to college.
Yeah.
My first aspiration was just to go for education.
Right.
So I worked hard. I graduated, actually, even though it was a small population of students, I still graduated number 5 in my class.
Okay.
So I said, okay, let me make sure I have an avenue to go to college. But when I got an opportunity to start going and colleges started visiting, yeah. And I got offered at 5 different colleges. Only D1 college was Rice University
back then. Yeah.
And so I was like, you know, I got an opportunity to take next level free education. I went into college still with that mindset of getting my degree. You know, playing football was secondary, and I enjoy it. I love it. I'm from Texas. Yeah. You know, basically, you ain't no choice.
Y'all are bred down there to play football.
I kid you not. The family, all the boys play football.
Right.
You know, you just
all the boys in your family. You just talking about in the neighborhood?
Oh no, it was all the boys everywhere.
Okay, yeah, yeah,
and especially in our area. Yeah. I mean, obviously, it wasn't a lot, but most of the predominant good athletes, I should say, came from that area.
Okay,
playing that small school, East Menard.
Okay, so now when you get to college, now, so you got this little country boy, and you done made it to college. It's got to be like a whole new world, a whole new experience, like. Because I know when I got to college, like, I just felt overwhelmed, and it was just too much. Like, the first day I was there, I called my mom, like, I don't know if this is for me. Like, that was the first thing I did.
You know what? My mom dropped me off and zoomed away, so I had no choice. I knew I had to stay at that point. And, you know, my mindset was to come in, and you had to grow up a lot early. My dad died when I was 5, and, you know, as I realized I didn't want to be a burden to my mama as I got older. So you just had to grow up fast. So I had a mature mindset for the most part, and I knew I was about business, and I knew what I needed to do to take it to the next level. And it wasn't, again, believe it or not, and I know you're going to ask that question at some point, but it wasn't about making it to the league. It was actually really about getting my degree.
Just full academics.
It was full academics. I scored decent enough on my ACT and SAT and ACT. So I was like, okay. And so, you know, they try to give you those courses that, like, you know, you know how it is.
Yeah.
You know, make sure he's okay to be able to play on Saturdays. Yeah. And I'm like, no, don't give me that. Don't give me that. I'll do this. I'll do that. When they go to the advisory. So I did that. And that was, again, that's how true. When I talk about education, I try to promote education to the youth. I mean that. It was not one of those ordinary speeches like, hey, get your education.
Yeah.
I mean to get to education because one of the things about it, with football, we know it doesn't stand for, long last.
Not long.
Yeah, NFL, not for long. But one thing they can't take away from you most part even though we got the concussion losses and everything else going on, is your mind. So I just, I thought education was number one for me for the most part.
So you think that had a lot to do, because I didn't even know about your father passing at such a young age. I mean, do you think how that helped mold you into, like, I need to be worried about down the road, I need to be looking at taking care of my mother, my family? Was that something that, like, kind of molded you at a young age?
Yeah, you know, you take some time adversities in life. And I took that adversity and it motivated me. It's like, you know, some people go up there and be a downer and be depressed and say, well, since I didn't have this and since I didn't have this opportunity, and they use excuses. Mm-hmm. But I said, okay, you know what? I'm gonna use this as a motivating factor.
Right.
I'm gonna use this to propel me to get up to the next level of this, next prong, this ladder in life. And it fared well, because you did still have those naysayers to say, you're not going to make it. And those family members. It's not just a stranger.
Your worst enemies are close right beside you sometimes.
And so it's like, and that was motivating.
Yeah.
I just like made me more hungry. I was like, all right, let's make it happen. You know, you're not going to determine my fate.
So now when you got to school and you were saying it was all about education, like football was secondary, which is amazing to me, because when I got recruited, it was just like football. Football was the forefront of everything. Like I was just, I'm going to school to play football. What are you going to study? I don't know, whatever they put me in. Like that was kind of my mindset. So to sit here and hear you, and I've had you, and I think Wendell Bryant was another one that was just like, man, no, I went to school for my education. So, you know, when did you start playing when you got to college? Like, were you redshirted? Did you play right away?
No, I played right away. I actually beat out a senior. The first game that we came into, he started just because he was a senior.
Right.
I played probably more snaps when you look at it in mm-hmm. general. The next week before practice, Coach here, Coach gonna call me in, you starting. I said, all right, I good. And I know when I'm seeing it sounds nonchalant. I was like, I came here to play. So starting is what I do. I don't like sitting on the bench anyway.
That's great.
So it was interesting. And I'll go through it real quick as the fact that I said I was starting. I get injured.
Same year?
Same year, same week that I'm supposed to start. Then my grandmother passed away, so let me rewind that. My grandmother passed away, and I said, I'm going home to the services. Yeah, time, you know, we're going to have services on the weekend, on Saturday when the game time.
Absolutely.
And Coach actually asked me a dumb question.
Yeah.
He said, how important your grandma?
Yeah, no.
And as soon as he said that, I looked at him. And I just walked out. I said, man, this man don't understand. So I left, went down there. The next week I got hurt. Nobody knew who I was because I had torn meniscus. Came back, played against Stephen F. Austin.
So hold on. So you tore your meniscus the first week you were starting. You came back the same year?
Yeah.
Same, like, how four, what was
four
the
weeks,
distance?
4 weeks.
That was back before they had all this nice surgery they do now.
4 weeks, I came back. Nobody knew who I was. And we played against Stephen F. Austin, Larry Sinners. And
okay,
I know you know who Larry
Sinners
is.
Yeah.
And so we played against them, and nobody knew exactly who I was, because you're not going to go that far back watching films, especially back then. You might go by 2 or 3 games. That's it. The coach told our AD. AD called me in the office and said, who's this number 90? We haven't seen him.
Right.
And he said, blase, blase. He told me that, you know what I did? I said, okay, and walked off. And that was an NFL scout at that time as a rookie, as a freshman.
Really, an NFL scout as a freshman?
Yeah, because I came to look at other players.
Yeah. So then let me, I've just got to wrap my mind around this, because I'm like, you came in straight out of high school, so I'm sure you had an amazing camp. You know, you were – obviously, you propelled yourself to a number 2 spot. You know, you're right behind a senior. You're pushing him to be a starter. Like, that to me is so amazing, because mentally and physically, when I first arrived in college, I wasn't ready. Mm-hmm. Like, I just wasn't. I wasn't strong enough. The game was moving too fast. So to come from a small school, 2A high school, and now you're playing college football, you take out a senior. Like, I mean, you had to feel like, I'm the man. Like, this is my team now.
Well, you know, they call me the number one recruit for defense at that year. Yeah. You know how it is. You got your number one offensive recruit, number one defensive recruit. I was number one defensive recruit. And I didn't even realize that till later. Yeah. Nobody even acknowledged that. And I was fine. But again, my mindset was not to sit on the bench. So I was going to go out there and play regardless. And you know how that is. We play hurt. We play through adversities. Mm-hmm. Another thing is, coming from Texas, coming from that small school, Coach Dale Leckler, his son played for the Raiders as well as the Texans as a punter, prepared us. I mean, yeah. I think I worked harder in high school than I did in college because it was they worked us to death. I kid you not. Yeah. But it prepared me. I was like, man, I was running with the DBs. I was like, this ain't.
How much were you weighing?
No, so when I came in, I was small.
Okay, yeah, I was going to say, hold on.
I was only like 217 or something like that.
That's like a linebacker.
Yeah, but I quickly gained some weight when you got that free meal, that table.
Yes, that free food is great.
Yeah, that free food is something else. A lot of starch.
When did your football skills, you started to see like, hey, I got a shot to make it to the NFL. Like, I know you said that academics was the first thing and that was the most primary thing, but when did it start, when did your football start to catch up with the academics and you realize, you know what, I have a chance to make it to the league?
Well, I gave you that one instance as my freshman. That was my freshman year. My second year, somebody told my mom something, and my mom had come to the game. So I'm like, and so happened she pulled up the same time I'm walking to the stadium. Uh-huh. I'm like, I'm happy to see my mom.
Yeah, absolutely.
My mom rolled down the window and said, who said you're going pro? And I said, Mom, who are you talking to us? What are you talking about? And she said, no, you better not. You better stay in and finish school.
I'm sure she said it with a little more authority.
Yeah. I gotta be politically real nice. Correct. And she drove off, and I don't even think she stayed for the game.
So she drove up there just to tell you. See, that sounds like my mom. My mom was a military.
2.5 hours from where I stayed, because it was still in Texas, but it was 2.5 hours. She did all that, took off. I don't know if she stayed for the game. Still don't know to this day. So I'm going up to your question, answering your question. Then my junior year, we played against Baylor.
Okay.
You know, D1.
Yeah, yeah. You got to show out. Yeah.
You know, D1 schools, and, you know, you ball out. And then at that time, they said, oh, you got to, you know, we're going to grade you pretty high, this and that. And I was like, okay. So answer your question, my junior year, when I knew it was an opportunity.
Oh, man, that's good, because I think for me, it was about the junior year as well. Like, you've been in school, you've learned everything, not everything you need to know, but you have a good feel of what's going on around mm-hmm. you. And like, man, I'm comparing myself to these guys. And you start to hear from your coaches, hey, you know, you're doing pretty good. If you pick it up, if you do this, if you do that. So now once you started getting that NFL buzz, like, that didn't distract you from your academics. I mean, how did that? Did you still keep your academics at the forefront, even though you knew NFL was there? Like, did you graduate?
Yes. It didn't distract me in that aspect because I didn't really take summer school. So, you know, I only had the hours that I had to my semester. So I still needed some hours to complete school, which I knew when I got drafted. And I just finished up, went back to Sam to finish up. A few of my hours, but I actually finished up at ASU.
Okay.
And then I got my degree, which I was proud of because I, you know, wanted to make sure my mom was proud. But, yeah. And, you know, first of all, you do it for yourself.
Right.
So in that aspect, it was an distraction. I continued, okay. And then I only waited a few years to get that done. I didn't wait forever like some people. Uh-huh. I waited a few years to get that done. But where it did distract me is my attitude. My attitude started getting kind of cocky. I'm gonna just be honest.
No, I get it. I got
a little
cocky. Yeah, of course.
And a little arrogant, which was not me. I was more of a humble person. But for whatever reason, I just got cocky. Like, the scouts would be coming to see me, and mm-hmm. I'll be on the sideline. Like, Bankson, why you not out there practicing? That's how I don't feel like it.
Wow, no, you wasn't cocky. You was a bit of a, you was being a hole.
But I'm thinking to myself later, it's like, why did I even say that? You know what I mean? When they giving me an opportunity. And I was like, I don't know what it was, because they did come to see me, and I was hurt. I had an high ankle sprain that kept keeping me out of game, or actually didn't really keep me out of many games, kept me out of practice. Yeah. And so that's the time they come down to see you. And I was just not out there performing so they could see what they possibly get.
I didn't know you like that, Banks. Did I knew you?
I know, I'm more humble, man.
Like that.
That was. I don't know why I changed my mindset. I don't. Lord, forgive me.
Yeah, that's okay. You live and you learn from it. Because yeah. I mean, I've talked on here a few times about stupid stuff that I did, and you know, when I first got drafted, you know how I was just like, oh, I made it. I'm in the NFL now, and that was when I got cut. So I was just like, oh, let me straighten up because. Now, you know, this is a job and they could take this away from me immediately. So now once you got drafted, who drafted you? The Cardinals drafted you?
Yes, Cardinals drafted
me. Okay. So you were here and we were just talking outside. We kind of lap over each other a little bit because we're about 5 years apart. Like we played with some of the same guys. Like, so when you got here in your first year in the NFL, you're drafted, you're on a team. Like, what was that like? Like, what would you, you know, did you feel like I've made it? And now, you know I got everything covered. I understand how the game works.
No, you know what? I didn't take that approach. I took approach of, you know what? You got these D1 schools, you know, even though you played against them in a bowl game, because I played in the Senior Bowl. Yeah, yeah. And, and back then, the Blue-Gray Bowl was played on Christmas. And so you're playing against these big-time schools. So, you know, I always said I should have been in those one of those schools at the end of the day. But you know what? It's not where you start, it's how you finish.
Right.
So I can't go up there and say I might have been something different. So I thank God for my path. But at the end of the day, I thought I would be that person. Yeah. So I don't think you know better than me. So that's how I approached playing against them and practice against them. And that actually, that mindset got me to start. My rookie year, I probably started like 7 or 8 games.
Okay, yeah.
Due to that mindset, beating people out.
That's good.
And so again, it still goes to that same thing. Like, I didn't like to sit the bench.
No, I didn't like sitting the bench either. But I mean, for me, I was always like scared. Like, I always practice and I lifted with the fear of, I don't want to get cut. You know, I don't want to lose this opportunity. So there was this like fear where, you know, like you said, oh, I'm better than you, or I got this chip on my shoulder. Mine was just like a fear. And I don't know where that came from, but it was always when I practiced, when I was in games, I would just go hard, especially after being cut in Chicago as a rookie, because I thought I had it all figured out, because I thought, oh, well, I was a second round draft pick. So I'm in.
You made
here.
It. Yeah,
I made it. Uh-huh. I got this money. I got a new place. I can do this for my mom. And then when that was taken away, I think the Cardinals picked me up. And I think that once I got picked up, it was an immediate wake-up call of, dude, this thing could be taken away from you at any moment. And from that point on, I was just like, there's no way I'm going to let this happen again. So anytime something happened, I'm going to make it tough on you.
Right.
You know, and
well, just, we learned probably earlier, just it wasn't recreational more. Yeah. You know what I mean? It wasn't a pastime thing. It was actually employment. It was actually a job. Yeah. And then, you know, they put embedded in our head. I know you're 5 years younger, but is, you know, the next man up type mindset. So you're always competing for your job. And then you're always competing with 32 teams when you think about it, because everybody can see that film. So I just always had that mindset. That's why I worked hard. I play all the way to the fifth quarter. Running to the ball, doing those extra things, made it tough for you to put me out of the game.
Yeah.
Became versatile. I actually played majority of my games. I played both sides as DN, played both sides as tackle, and also played nose tackle at some points of the game. So, and that was basically my whole
make career. Make it hard for you to get rid of me. Yeah, the more you can do.
Made it hard because the more you can do, the more versatile.
Yeah, the longer they keep you around. Now, I played those same positions, but it wasn't all in the same year. It's like when I first got drafted, I was a defensive end, you know, slimmer, a lot faster. Then as I started picking up more weight, I went to a 3 technique, and then eventually I was a nose. I hate nose tackle. That was probably my best year. I played under Deke Pollard, and he played that cock nose, and I don't even know if you've ever seen that. It's like a tilt nose, and by far my best year. I hated playing nose tackle because it's like you're getting double teamed every single play.
It's coming from every which way.
Every which way.
I actually got drafted as a nose tackle.
Did you?
Yeah, because, you know, the Cardinals, it was in the beginning of 3-4 defense.
Okay.
Then in the course of that first year, we switched to a 4-3 defense.
Mm-hmm.
And then because of the size of the D linemen, we had little, we call it little nickel and big nickel. Mm-hmm. When we thought it was a run team, yeah. most of the NFC East at that time, that's what we yeah. playing, the Giants, Phillies, and Washington. And so most of those, and the Cowboys run teams, and then yeah, pass was second. So we put the big nickel in there. When we go with those pass teams, Atlanta, those guys, we'll yeah. put the little nickel. We have Freddie Joe and Ken Harvey on the outside and Swan and myself on the inside and all the pins. Sometimes Ruck and those other guys, Mike Jones, would be tackles. But those two guys, yeah. which are outside linebackers, would be the DNs.
See, and we were just talking about that, kind of the progression of where football started, because we were talking about that just before we got on, how – when we played, it was more run heavy. Like your defensive ends needed to be 6'4", 6'5", 310, yeah. 280. And now these guys are like 6'5", 250, 240. And you were saying how you felt like guys that played with that old school mentality had the advantage nowadays. Like,
well, you know, the Aaron Donald, and like I said, the Chris Jones, as we indicated when we was talking offline, those guys know how to play with the leverage. Yeah. They know how to use their hands first. And, you know, a lot of those guys you're talking about, outside linebackers, you know, Simeon Reigns was probably in that era that yeah, started yeah, coming yeah. out to be smaller because, you know, they can get around the corner or they can outrun. A lot of the quarterbacks weren't the fastest, so they could yeah. get around the corner and sack the quarterback, which is totally understandable because, you know, that's ball control when you think about it, especially defense, and get your offense back on the field. But I think the guys that learn how to play the old school way with their hands mostly, mm-hmm. doing the leverage, showing the techniques, you know, causing issues and yeah. setting a new line of scrimmage, as yeah. we've been taught.
Absolutely.
You know
that 2 yards in
yeah,
the backfield.
Yeah, 2 yards in the backfield. Yeah. We were taught that. Those guys seem the ones that be making a lot of success. And we know yeah. what sack is going to be sack.
Yeah, sacks is always important.
And, you know, it's important. And those guys, to be honest, get paid the most. But then you got Chris Jones and Aaron Donald, inside guys. Yeah. You see they're making a difference too.
They do. They're playing with that leverage and those big, strong hands. And, I mean, you see things, or you see film of Aaron Donald being doubled and triple team, and you're like,
don't mean nothing.
And he still makes the play, and you're just – and you're watching like – There's different levels. Like, you can make it to the NFL, and there are levels within that level. So now, when you were with the Cardinals for how long? 4 years?
6 years.
6 years with the Cardinals. Okay. And then you went to Cincinnati.
Mm-hmm.
I've only played in Cincinnati. And when you come into Cincinnati, and forgive me out there if I'm talking bad about your city, I never saw anything great, because we went straight into the stadium and we stayed downtown, and I was like, I don't know if this is a place I'd want to be a part of. Is that really like that? I'm sure there's some nice places, but what did you take out of Cincinnati?
First of all, who they fans, forgive him, since he does not know what he's talking about. I'll throw that disclaimer so I can help Big Russ out. You know what? It was different when I first got there. You know, we practiced in the dungeon. That's what we call it.
I've never even heard of that.
No, it's trust me. Railroad tracks on the top. The train's coming through loud. When it snows, all you're doing is just shoveling the snows out. We ain't no bubble, and you just practice it. You better layer up just to make it. So, you know, I understand that aspect. But, you know, Cincinnati was an actual cultural town. It had diversity. It had some interesting diversity. Yeah. Diversity, but it did. I mean, that's the first time, I'll be honest, I went to see a black play.
Really?
Yeah, One Monkey Don't Stop No Show. I was like,
okay,
I ain't.
That's a terrible line.
No, but it was actually a good play. It wasn't even about what you're thinking.
No, I just.
It was just the fact of like, man, it was pretty good. It's, yeah. You know, it was the first time I'd seen something of this nature. Yeah. And of course, Tyler Perry came through later. I would have grasped that before time. I'll be a billionaire. But
I don't know. Yeah. You see what's going on out there nowadays.
Well, yeah, some controversy.
Yeah, it's a lot of controversy. But so you know,
think about it, Russ. When you was at the top of your game, yeah, you know, I think about it, you're at that pedestal, you know, people gonna attack that.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's your coaches, sometimes it's your teammates, sometimes it's just the fans or whatever, because anything they see, they're not like, oh, that's a problem. Rustin comb his hair right.
Yeah.
Even though he's bald right now.
Yeah, yeah.
You know,
it's always something.
It's always something that they'll try to bring you down. And that's just life. And and most people just got to understand that aspect. Mm-hmm. In some cases, it's true. Some cases, not. Yeah. And then you got all in between. But yeah. the simple fact that when you're at the top of your game, yeah. somebody, they always look, because what sells?
Oh, controversy always sells. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Doesn't matter if it's right or wrong. People want to read. Ooh, you know, as much as they love to build up these guys, they love to see them fall too.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's just funny that you bring that up, and I'm going to draw a blank on a young man's name. He's the big center for Purdue. The big center, he's like 7'3".
I know who you're talking about.
Yeah, so
ADB, whatever.
Yeah, I don't even want to mess his name up, but there was a video going around social media where he was after a big game, you know, just recently, he's at a party and he opens up a door, young lady walks in, he walks in behind her, and it's like, what is he doing wrong? Like, why are you videotaping every move that he makes? So it just goes to what you're saying. It's like people are always looking to be the next viral sensation. And it's like, you're putting this man's business out here for absolutely nothing. So, you know, I understand how when you're at the top, you know, top of your game or whatever that may be, whether it's football or life, people want to take their shots at you. It's like, as much as they love to see you there, they want to see you fall. And it's just like, you know, why?
For what?
Yeah, for what? What benefit do you get out of that? So now, you transitioned, and when you got, and I guess I want to really talk about this because I know it was hard for me. When you got done playing football, you knew, like, this is it for me. And I know, you know, you're big in the NFLPA, and you were the president. Like, how hard was that for you going from football to the workforce? Like, how was that? Because I know for me, it took a while to really find what I wanted to do and find my niche. Yeah.
And it was tough for me too as well. You know, I went into different various businesses, at apartment complex, at restaurants. I had some houses. I had some lots, you know, invested in this business, did some hard money, and all those variations of trying to see what's going to be beneficial and what's going to, you know, keep the flow going.
Yeah, yeah,
for the most part. Yeah. A lot of those things failed for whatever reason. Some of those things were successful, but some of those things just was not right at that time, or I didn't have the oversight. My advice for the young generation is start planning ahead of time, because I know football is your number one, because that's what's going to put the food on your table. But begin to plan way before that exit time comes. But even though you don't know when the exit time is coming, so you should start planning. And the people around you should be motivating you to put that into practice before that last time saying, I'm done, I can't play no more. That's my advice. Then the niche, I even was a stockbroker, believe it or not. I was with Charles Schwab for a few years. Coached some high school, coached some junior college. You know, you do all those things just to say, like you said, see what it is. Well, the longest I've been is behavioral health, dealing with the youth. Mm-hmm. And that's, thinking about time frame wise, probably around 13 years now. And so that, I think that's more in my niche and been beneficial for me. And so that's what I've been doing for the last 13 years.
Because it's like you said, when, you know, you're playing football. And I know for me, when I was playing, it was, that's all you thought about was football. And then all of a sudden, when you start to realize, like, man, this game is getting a little too fast for me, these kids are getting younger and younger and faster and stronger. And it was just like, when I retired, because it was after the Super Bowl, and I was working out, and I knew, like, man, you know, my not healing as quick, mm-hmm. and, you know, I'm just still sore. The biggest thing, there was a window where I just didn't know what I wanted to do. Like, what gives me that same motivation to get up every morning? And, you know, it's always going to be hard to find the money. We all know that. But there has to be something in you that you're like, this is what I love doing. And I think for me, it got to the coaching. Like, once I started doing the coaching, I was like, I was very passionate about mm-hmm. that. And then, so that kind of led me into doing with the podcast. So it was like, you have to find something that you really are comfortable with and something that excites you, because if you don't have that, I mean, you just hear about these guys just kind of wasting away.
Well, you know, if you play some significant time in a league, you're still going to be retired young.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I always believe, even at this age and stage of my life, and I'm 54, you know, and of course, in NFL terms, you can retire at 55 with your full retirement, but you know, I always say you got to still do something. You know, you still got to, like you said, have something motivate you to get up in the morning, whatever that might be, volunteering, working part-time at some that you enjoy doing, anything, because I think if you don't, just like muscles, if you don't work them out, you know, they go to waste. Start, you know, they start not being efficient as they once was before. And that's just the same thing just in life. If we're not really doing anything, I believe we'll waste away a lot sooner than we should.
Yeah. It's so, like you see that with coaches that have coached for their entire lives. And then when they retire, it's like they pass away within a few years. And it's like, well, you were so vibrant and so much energy. Now, with everything, you know, we discussed here, I this is something I kind of ask people. You go back and talk to a young Bankston, you know, just starting out, and let's just say in the NFL, we're not even going to go back to high school. Like, what would you advise him? What would you say differently to him? How would you have him maneuver his life from that point?
I mean, I saved a lot of money when I was playing, you know, and when I started the business, you know, I honestly didn't have the right approach, even though I might have some of the knowledge, but the approach was, let me have a business in Kansas City, which I had the restaurant. Let me have a business in Dallas where I had the apartments, and I'm just going to fly everywhere, have a good time and collect checks, but no really oversight. I would just say, hey, just really research. You know, what you're getting into, take your time because you have opportunity to take your time because you have some funds that will cover you until you understand what you're doing. Right. And then get yourself around the right people because, you know, just in life, you know, you're not going to run this life on your own. I don't care who you are. You just mentioned the guys that you started dealing with in the networking and because you need that.
Yeah.
You need that. You need somebody like I think Warren Buffett. I forgot who it was. Maybe a Walden or Walmart. Get people that are smarter than you.
Yeah, absolutely.
Get people that are smarter than you that understand the business and listen to the advice they give you because wisdom comes in the multitude of counseling. So that's what I would tell myself, you know. The young Bankston getting into the league.
Yeah, I would probably tell the young Russell, you know, stay at home. You know, stay out the streets at night. But that was only like my first year or so. You know, once I got released and, you know, all that kind of came to a grinding halt, like, man, this could be taken away from you at any moment. So that really gave me like a clear vision of what the NFL is all about. And that's when that whole like terminology of not for long kicked in of, man, you know, who's to say next time that I'm even going to be picked up by anybody. So, you know, that's like I said, I've always played scared. I've always been like the type of guy who's like, man, you know, what's going to happen? Like, I'd rather you you know, invite me in than for me to go there and be embarrassed. So, and being embarrassed in Chicago, and I say embarrassed, was being released. It's a wake-up call.
It was a wake-up.
And so when I got to my next stop, I was like, this is not going to happen to me again, bro. So, bro, I appreciate you, man, coming in and having this conversation with me, brother. I appreciate that. Thank you.
Thanks for tuning in to The Route. Don't forget to subscribe and connect with us on socials for exclusive updates. We'll see you next week.